This AgriTalk podcast is brought to you by Acuron corn herbicide from Syngenta, which delivers 5 to 15 more bushels an acre than any other herbicide. Acuron is a restricted-use pesticide. Acuron Yield Advantage range is based on 2016 Syngenta and university trials. Weather-wise, today sure felt more like a lamb than it did a lion, but the grain market started March with the attitude of a lion, and this lion did its share of selling. Livestock futures were mixed, and equities clawed back a bunch of last week's setback.
Live from a world of wide-open possibilities via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This afternoon, we feature Rich Pawson from Critical Point Podcast. In the final segment, hunker down for the Artak attack. Kerry Artak from Artak Advisory. And right after the news, Jack Scoville from the Price Futures Group. I am handsome newsman Davis Michelson. Now, the host of AgriTalk, Jeff Flory.
Yeah, so we had Kirk Hens from BAMWX on this morning, and I didn't ask him. I didn't even ask him if there's anything to the in like a lion, out like a lamb, in like a lamb, out like a lion for March. Uh-huh. Do you believe that kind of stuff?
I don't know. What your comments took me back to, there was a wise, aged veteran of the industry who took me under his wing early in my career, pro farmer. And yeah. I remember I was using the phrase lion's share.
Oh, yeah. You know? Yeah.
And I remember that gentleman told me, lion's share? What does that even mean? When have you ever known? Wiesmeyer, yeah. When have you ever known a lion to leave anything? The lion's share is the whole thing,
is
what
it.
He said.
That's
now, have
right.
we taken back the lion's share?
I did not say that it was that we took back the lion's share. I said that the lion did its share of selling.
Fair enough.
Have you ever known a lion to share anything?
Man, the things you say really stick in my head. I don't know what
you know,
it is, bro.
I'm starting to realize that. I need to be a little more careful with things that I say to you. They stick around for a while. Woo-hoo. You know, there was that one thing, though. Yeah, forget that. Mm-hmm. That's not true.
Oh, all right. I'll take that right out. Actually, my therapist already removed that for me, so I'm good.
good
on that one.
Good for them. That's a good therapist. All right, man. Let's get to it. What you got in the news?
Chip Russian wheat prices inched higher last week in anticipation of today's hike in the export tax. The market is still struggling with how Russia's efforts to restrict wheat exports will impact overall global supplies, especially with Australia and India likely to cover any Black Sea shortfall in the near term. Technically, May soft red wheat futures have plunged nearly 40 cents from last week's high, within 20 cents of what chart watchers describe as critical support. Export inspections of wheat in the weekend of February 25 totaled nearly 273,000 metric tons. That was short of trade expectations. July hard red winter wheat 9 cents lower, 628 and 3 quarters. July soft red off 7 and 1 half cents, 642 and a half. September spring wheat 6 cents lower, 647 and three quarters.
Yeah, that heavily traded May SRW contract, it opened higher in the overnight, but we saw beans gap higher, we saw corn gap higher, and it was like wheat kind of gave it up first. And when that contract, that May SRW went through Friday's low, that was it. It triggered some heavy long liquidation in that market and set it back fairly aggressively.
Corn export inspections in the weekend of February 25 were near the top end of trade expectations, totaling nearly 1.64 million metric tons. And despite a strong overnight price performance, the strong loadings pace did little to support corn prices. The corn market traded today like Brazil's wet weather pattern is expected to improve, but that is not the case. Delayed Safrina corn plantings make the market vulnerable to a weather scare over the next couple of months. Technically, May corn gapped higher but failed to hold on to those gains, triggering additional long liquidation. The result was a downside reversal in May futures. New crop futures just posted a high range open and low range close. May corn futures 9.25 cents lower, 538.25. July corn fell 8 cents, 527. December corn closed at 468 and three quarters. That one's down 2 cents today.
Yeah, the Bears really worked the spreads in the market today in a downtrending market. The nearby contracts went down at a quicker pace than the back month contracts. We'll find out from Rich if there's anything to take from that spread action.
Soggy conditions in Mato Grosso and arid conditions in Argentina contributed to a volatile session that resulted in a high range open and a low range close in old crop bean futures. New crop futures were just slightly lower, but still set the stage for a test of support at Friday's low of 12.08.5 in the near term. Export inspections of soybeans topped trade expectations at nearly 880,000 metric tons. 880,000 metric tons. May bean futures 13 cents lower, 1391 and a quarter. July beans off 10 and a half cents, 1381. November bean futures closed at 1219 and a quarter, down 3.75 cents, Chip.
Yeah, you know, last week I said, or I recommended to everybody to take a look at that November soybean chart. Go ahead and look at it again, even after price pressure the last one, two, three sessions. The market is respecting the overall uptrend. There's a nice pattern in place. We'll find out from Rich, but I'm feeling like this is still a very organized rally that we've got in the new crop market.
Cotton futures are working to recover Thursday's sharp declines, and fresh buying helped the market push sharply higher. May cotton 274 points higher, 91.57. December cotton up 246 points to 86.79. April cattle 102.5 lower, 118.97.5. June cattle off 92.5, 117.50. March feeders off 147.5, 137.20. Snout side, April lean hogs 57.5 cents higher, 87.72.5. June up 77.5, 94.95. Chip.
All right, thank you very much. Let's bring in Jack Scoville, Price Futures Group. How you doing, Jack?
Hey, I'm wonderful. How about you?
Doing okay. So, I'll ask you the question that I'm going to ask Rich here in a little bit. What do you make of the new crop market? It feels like a fairly, very organized market still at this point.
Yeah, I think it is. I think it's hanging in there pretty well. You're right. It is respecting the uptrend, and it is an orderly market, just gently working its way higher. And I kind of expect that to continue. Corn market as well as beans. It looks like we're still in the process of trying to figure out whether we're going to have a good big new crop or not. And until we get the crop starting to get planted anyway, it's going to be tough to really break that thing. The big problem has been the nearby and the spread action, which has been pretty poor overall.
Right. What does that spread action tell us? I mean, is it a function of that demand is slowed down, or is it an effort to hold on to acres for both corn and beans?
Well, I think it's a little of both, to tell you the truth. I think the deferreds are firm because we do need to hold on to acreage, and there's, you know, a whole lot of debate over exactly what we're going to end up with, what the mix will be. And there's some other things like cotton starting to rear its ugly head that could grab an acre here and there and things like that. So I think there is that battle. But the nearby, I'm a little bit worried about demand, especially with the soybean harvest finally starting to expand a little bit down in Brazil.
Okay. South American weather, is that what you're watching most closely this week, Jack?
Yes, sir. I'm going to be watching carefully.
Very good. Thanks, buddy. We'll talk to you next week.
Okay, sounds great. Thank you.
You bet. Jack Scoville, Price Futures Group, coming up next. Conversation with Rich Possen, Critical Point Podcast, right here on AgriTalk. The 2020 harvest is long over, but managing resistant weeds remains key as we move into 2021. Steve Gum, corn herbicide product lead with Syngenta, is here today. Steve, how does a lack of weed seed bank management impact a grower's potential yield?
So essentially, deposits are made to the bank from the reserve of weed seeds developed from unmanaged infestations or weed escapes. And once those deposits are made into the ground, seeds can grow and mature into more weeds, creating a cycle that can be really hard to stop. As this happens, fields are at a higher risk for resistance to develop, and herbicide applications become less effective year over year.
Yeah, so you mentioned to me that you have four key ways that growers can keep their weed seed bank accounts low. What are those?
Sure thing. There are four key actions that we always talk about to help growers minimize risks of the weed seed bank building in their fields. These include using full labeled rates of herbicides that optimize coverage and control, apply herbicides before the largest weed in the field reaches 4 inches in height, scout fields for problem areas and identify those weeds. Clean equipment between fields is really important, especially at harvest, to prevent seeds from spreading. It's also important to keep in mind that new herbicide technology should not be treated as a silver bullet for resistant weed management. Instead, new herbicides should be used as an additional tool in an integrated, comprehensive weed management program.
Wow, that is excellent perspective right there. Steve, what's your recommended herbicide that offers the best comprehensive program in corn?
In corn, Acuron herbicide will help fields start clean and protect them from weeds prior to emergence, so you can control weeds now and in the future as a premium resistance management solution. With four active ingredients and three effective sites of action, Acuron is the best herbicide solution for control of resistant weed biotypes with built-in weed resistance management. Remember, Acuron also provides growers 5 to 15 more bushels an acre when applied pre-emergence at a full label rate, in addition to helping prevent increasing that weed seed bank.
Got to keep that weed seed bank low. To find out what an extra 5 to 15 bushels an acre with Acuron corn herbicide could mean for your revenue potential, try Syngenta's online calculator. You can find it at www.findmorebushels.com or talk to your local Syngenta retailer. And remember to always read and follow label instructions. Acuron is a restricted-use pesticide. Acuron yield advantage range is based on 2016 Syngenta and University trials.
Never miss a story. Text NEWS to 31313 to have today's top stories delivered to your phone.
Welcome back. I'm Chip Flory, got Davis Michelson with me, and this
Hello.
Is AgriTalk.
It is.
Glad that you could join us today.
AgriTalk!
Yes.
All right. Rich Possen, Critical Point Podcast, is our guest analyst today. Joins us right now. Rich, it's good to have you here, man. Welcome.
Thank you, Chip.
All right. All right. I got to admit, Rich, I was thinking about you early last week when the grain markets, even the livestock markets, were showing some strength. And everybody that I talked to said, it's an inflation trade. It's an inflation trade. It's an inflation trade. Then by the end of the week, we get into the, well, it's the end of the month. It's the end of the month. It's the end of the month. So, but when they were saying inflation trade, I was wondering what you would think of that. Is that what it was? Is that what's going on? Is it something that we need to watch more closely in the days, weeks ahead?
I do, but it's going to come and go from importance. Basically, I think inflation is going higher all the way in the next decade. Interest rates up this decade. The problem is you're going to see surges in interest rates and inflation, and sometimes the commodity markets are going to like it, and sometimes they're going to not like it. You're going to see most of the worries, though, over in the stock market. We saw that last week when interest rates surged. What you want to watch out on commodities is if interest rates are moving up faster than inflation, you're going to see some of these inflation speculators, investors back off on commodities. When inflation moves up faster than interest rates, runs hotter, they're going to be more happy and they're going to go run in there and buy more commodities. Even gold right now, it's been soft. People are disgusted. What's going on? Why isn't it going higher? We're forecasting all this inflation. The other thing is look at real interest rates, meaning divide interest rates by inflation. You've got some negative interest rates or very low interest rates. Of that, and usually gold prefers something better, something different. And so it's quite possible gold's fair valued right now, and it just doesn't have the interest to get going. And you're just going to see this throughout the commodities, and we've got to watch out for that. And like I say, also the stock market. We're just going to, especially last week, they just had too many orders piled up with too many strategies in the bond market. And when that interest rate went above 1.2%, there was somebody warning it's going to explode, and boy, it did. And now even that person saying that he didn't think it would happen that fast and be that volatile, he now thinks rates will back off a bit. Well, we're seeing the stock market go back up now because they're hoping that interest rates are going to stall. And unfortunately, we're going to be stuck with this kind of stuff throughout this decade, I think, and later this year. My gut feeling, though, is interest rates aren't going to get too carried away. I mean, you look at the rate on a 10-year note, it's 1.5 now. To me, that's historically low. On the other hand, for someone who deals in that stuff and looks at their cost of interest rate, it just went up 55% this year. So it's understandable why some get excited, you know. Now, here's right. The good news. I do think we pulled money out of the bond market to help commodity purchases a bit and the stock market. Probably more stock market, but I think that was a key, that they dumped some bonds and said, I got to put that money to work because the commodities are going to grow and I want to be a part of this.
Yeah.
And the dollar even reflected that, except it ticked up right at the end of the week. But it did that because they returned to trading what a dollar does, and that's watching what's going on around the world in the interest rates. And they just said, hey, U.S. is moving up faster than the other countries. Sell some of those other country currencies, buy the dollar. We'll have to watch on that, obviously, too. But I'm still a long-term bearish dollar. But don't be surprised. It can move sideways for a very long time before the next leg lower. But I'm not convinced we've got a massive run-up coming in the dollar. That would create some kind of – that would have to come from some kind of economic problem, and we'll probably already recognize that and then be worried over our commodities.
Right. Okay. You know, before I ask this next question, people need to understand that Rich Possett can talk the supply and demand fundamentals all day long with what is going on in corn, soybeans, wheat, oats, go down the list. But I got to ask you this question, Rich. What you just talked about there on the inflation front and the dollar front and the interest rates, does that mean that to get a good read on these grain markets and even the livestock markets going forward, that we need to change up what we're looking at on a daily basis? Or do we stay focused on the regular fundamentals of the markets?
You still want to keep the regular fundamentals, the microeconomics and fundamentals. But for the first time in decades, we have to start thinking more of inflation. And this is what concerns a lot of young grain traders out there and commodity traders and even Wall Streeters, even the stock market people.
Sure.
They may be missing the fact that we're moving back into the 1950s, 1970s, which wasn't always necessarily a great move for commodities. But the point is inflation went up, commodities basically at least ground higher. And I just this weekend was part of a group of economists, and I was shocked the amount of talk of the Federal Reserve is switching from a monetary policy to fiscal policy, and they believe that means more inflation. So, yes, we need to keep an eye on it because it does impact how the consumer is buying. And in other words, we can put prices higher, and yes, you can hurt your consumer and they back off, but you're going to find out maybe they don't back off as much as they used to because you've already built in that inflation.
Yeah. Okay.
So you still got to be bearish sometimes, but
yeah.
I'm not thinking we're due for super bear times anytime soon. Now I think hopefully we put some kind of floor in. My gosh, we've had 10 years of lower commodity prices on my 200-year chart. That's rather unusual.
right. Yeah. I got you. Yep. It makes sense. I continue to hear references now to this modern economic theory, Rich. And that it's okay to just print dollars. If we need more dollars, Congress can pass the bill, the Treasury can print more dollars, and we've got it. Isn't this dangerous?
Well, the problem is we've been printing money throughout my lifetime, and I can remember when I was 10 years old, my dad complaining of this, and I looked at him and says, I don't believe you, Dad, and he says, of course you don't. it's just interesting that, you know, I question anybody can forecast printing too much that actually destroys the economy. It'll be something else that hurts the economy and then triggers too much debt, too much printing money, and then destroys the economy. I'm done with trying to pick that magic number. I think they could print a lot. I'll tell you why it works for this country is the world really wants our dollars. They like doing business in our dollars. And we just get away with printing more than what some other countries could do. And we're also a big country and very diverse economy. And we're one of the leaders in the world. It helps us. Someday, if we lose our popularity in the dollar, some other country's currency, or they come up with a world currency, that's when I would start worrying. Okay.
Right.
And then you also have to worry if you get into a long-term trend of lower population in your country, you really shouldn't be printing money if you're losing population. That's you're going to print too much, and that's dangerous. Right. Well, our population's growing, and we keep trying to invent things, and we keep growing commodities, and we keep using them. We burn through them. It gives us a buffer there where I think the Fed's okay and the Treasury's okay, where we print a lot. And I know those charts look ugly. And yes, there's probably a day of reckoning coming, but my model's saying it may be 20 years away yet. So,
okay.
I'm not going to worry too much at the moment. And I really do think the Treasury and Federal Reserve are going to work closer together than what they've done in decades. They really do want to get this inequality down, help out the middle class and poor. Yes, that's going to create inflation. They already know it, and what they've decided is they'll deal with it. They're going to let it happen. Now, they're smart enough to know you can't have runaway inflation. I mean, it's, you know, you can get too high, and you're going to be really sorry. But right today, with the way our inflation's working, we got some room to move higher.
Okay.
In inflation, and therefore, probably everything else is going to go up. And that's going to be what's tricky when you're in the commodity business because, yeah, you get the higher inflation, it holds your prices up, and then you get a crop problem, and your price goes even higher than what you thought because of inflation. Problem is your costs go up too, you know?
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
Mean, everybody else has got to get paid too, right?
And one of the biggest costs for the federal government is the insurance rate, Rich. They can't let interest rates get too high, can they?
No, they can't. So that's in their plan, too. And I'll tell you, I think the Fed today is moving, working, trying to come up with new strategies than ever before, where they're trying to see how do you deal with a crashing stock market and economy versus an imploding economy because of super high inflation. They're smart enough to come up with some other things. That doesn't mean something doesn't fail someday. And I do have an idea when that's probably going to happen. But I'm not too worried. If this decade, I think we got a decent bull market coming in the stock market, good economic growth. And the commodities, yes, you know, you ramp, if you run those prices high, especially on a crop problem, everybody's going to rush out there and plant more. So you know they're coming back down, but is it going to be as bearish or devastating what we've seen in recent years? I kind of doubt it. Yeah, hopefully we've got a little better floor there.
Okay. Man, we are off and running in the conversation with Rich. Good stuff so far, man. I love talking about the models, the business models that you've got, the perspective that you bring to it. You've got a bunch. You've got other models that you use as well, crop models, just weather models, everything that Rich takes a look at. What we're going to talk about next is we've got these tight stocks that we've been talking about for a while. Makes the markets more vulnerable to any kind of a weather scare. What are the odds that we will see some sort of a scare in 2021? That's next. Rich Possett right here on AgriTalk. It's time for headline news featuring some of the headlines ripped from Pro Farmers First Thing Today. The Wall Street Journal says less than half of the COVID stimulus package is for true COVID relief. The FDA and CDC clears Johnson & Johnson's shot, giving the U.S. a third vaccine option. Record-setting January soybean crush. Chinese soybean futures hit record highs. Russian wheat prices climb leading up to the export duty increase. Demand for wheat at China's auctions has faded over the past month. China sold just 41.7% of the total put up at the latest auction. China's official gauge of factory activity fell to its weakest level in 9 months in February. But of course, the Lunar New Year holiday had something to do with that. Give ProFarmer a try at tryprofarmer.com.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors. In the morning, you're coffeeed up and you're thinking. In the afternoon, you've calmed down, but you're still thinking. We're here all day. AgriTalk.
Just keep listening.
Now it's time to focus in on where I go from here. Lord have mercy on my next 30 years.
I still can't tell, Davis. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
He's not just 30 talking about his next 30. He could be any age talking about his next 30.
I disagree.
I know you do, and you're wrong.
I really do.
Rich knows. I will tell you. I will let you know when you're wrong on something. Mm-hmm. And in this case, yeah, I think you're wrong.
Well,
I'm 55, thinking
wrong
about my next 30.
Sure. Well, just because you say I'm wrong doesn't mean I'm actually wrong. That's the thing,
Chip.
I
don't
know.
I think that's what it might mean, Davis.
I think the lion's share of this is bullcrap. If you want my opinion.
Well, that means it's all bullcrap then. Welcome back. I'm Chip. That's Davis. We are both looking forward to our next 30 years. And,
that was a very crass thing for me to say. I don't think I've ever said anything quite that crass on the air before. I'm sorry, America. Somewhere a puppy is being rescued from a well. How's that? Does that cancel it out?
We're talking with Rich Possen. No, we're talking with Rich Possen, Critical Point Podcast. Before we get back to Rich, let's go ahead and recap how the markets closed.
Chip, July hard red winter wheat 9 cents lower, 6.28¾. July soft red fell 7½ cents to 6.42½. May corn futures 9¼ cents lower, 5.38¼. July corn fell 8 cents, 5.27. May soybean futures 13 cents lower today, 13.91¼. July beans off 10½, 13.81. May cotton, look out, 274 points higher, 91.57. April live cattle, $1.25 lower, 118.97½. March feeders dropped 147.5, 137.20. And April lean hogs, 57½ cents higher at 87.72½. There's your quick market recap. Back to you, buddy.
All right. You know, Big Apple, you should work
Manzana
on getting
grande
either Tim McGraw or Phil Vassar, who wrote the song.
Phil Vassar. That's right.
On the show so that we can find out, is he 30 talking about his next 30, or is he any age talking about his next 30?
So you can't ask it like that. Because they're looking for mass appeal. They're trying to sell records here, baby. This song's for anybody. Come on. We got to finesse them into that question in order for it to be a valid response.
You know, I think that song is probably like 20 years old, so it's has appealed to a lot of people, even if it is
already
just, even if it is for the wrong interpretation of the song.
Sure, sure.
Yeah.
Can I just tweet the question to them, though?
Yes, that would be just fine.
I'll just tweet them, and then we'll say, here's what they said.
That would be good. And then let's get them on to explain it. I'd be happy to do that.
All right.
Let's get back to the conversation with Rich Possen, Critical Point Podcast. So, Rich, when I was reading headline news, another thought came up that I wanted to ask you about here. The stimulus package, another round of it. Is this type of federal support something that you see sticking around for a while?
I'll tell you, on that Federal Reserve side and now maybe the Treasury, I think they're going to start thinking, how do they become more aggressive, especially during recessions? And I think they want automated programs, much like what's going on in Wall Street and the commodity trading, where these computers just say, sell, buy. I think they're going to set up some automated programs there saying, hey, we got to get going and nick this in a bud. They're really trying to make sure they control things and don't allow things to blow up. And I think they've seen some weakness in our financial markets at times they don't like. Even though the financial markets continue to grow, things can just break down at any moment in any market. And so I was a bit surprised. Yeah, the day's coming where we're going to have a bank account just with the Federal Reserve or government or something. Suddenly, bam, there's a bunch of money in there. But in the near term, though, I wouldn't advise this on the stimulus side, which is really more pure government. Okay, that's why Congress is involved. It's really not. It's not the Federal Reserve. It's not Treasury. So that kind of stuff, I don't know how much the government can do, because they can spend a lot of time arguing one another. I think the real program development is going to be on the Federal Reserve side, linked to the Treasury, and not so much Congress. I wouldn't put the Federal Reserve saying, we don't even want to talk to those people.
If they see
the trouble, they're going to take care of it. And they kind of have to, because they got a mandate to help out the economy. So,
Okay. Okay. The question that I asked at the end of the last segment, okay, what are your models showing you as far as the vulnerabilities to some kind of a weather scare in 2020? I think I know what the answer is. I'm kind of laughing at myself for even asking it. How vulnerable are we to a weather scare in 2021, Rich?
We are vulnerable, but we've lost on amino. That's concerned me here in the recent days, and my model says 80% probability of lower yield. Well, 2 months ago it said, yeah, and that lower yield is going to be 5 to 25 bushel. Not saying 80%, but it might be 1 to 25 bushel. So not much help there. At least it's leaving the door open for it. It's not really seeing that something has been canceled. But I think what it's warning is it would have been better if we kind of kept this La Nina going. So I'm a bit, I'm thinking we really might only see a few bushel knocked off this year. And yet I cannot rule out that we still get it. And so I'm focusing more on what's the market doing. And we'll just wait and see what we get when it comes time when it's growing season, you know. Okay. And I would say the overall price model is saying, yeah, we've got a good chance there's going to be another bounce here going into summer. In fact, corn shouldn't top for a type of long-term business cycle top that occurs like 4 to 6 times a year or a decade ago. So my guess is we've got another shot coming higher. And just, is it going to be with us here, or are we going to actually have a crop problem? And I must say, some of my stuff has backed off a little bit here, but not enough to give up. I just have to wait and see like everyone else. It's not saying to give up and turn bearish here. I am concerned next year. It is saying prices will be down, and it's probably going to get a decent crop by next year. Some of this could relate to economic, because I got a lot of other things that are saying things will be down a little bit. We may cool off the inflation a little next year. When we see copper back off and some of these other things, that's just normal business. So I don't want to scare anybody to thinking, no, the economy is going to fall apart and we're going to lose all our demand for commodities. Nothing like that. It's just saying we'll get a little softness next year, which means if we can get that bounce in summer, just like every other year, we got to make sure we take care of business and lock some prices in. So.
Right. Right. Okay. Okay. Yeah. When we talk about your overall attitude toward commodity prices, let's just focus primarily on the grains. Your attitude towards the grain prices is overall the trend is strong, but it doesn't mean that prices go straight up or go straight up forever. We're going to have periods in which we set back. Now, when we talk about those setbacks, Rich, what should you expect in it? Because what I'm saying here is, you know, when we were down at three, whatever it was at the lows in 2020, everybody's attitude was we were going to 280. Well, we didn't. And a lot of things changed in a relatively short period of time to prevent that from happening. But what would you suspect is a typical kind of setback in the kind of market that you envision?
Yeah, let's say corn tops out closer to $6 this summer. I would tend to think you got to dial in $4 next year on the futures.
Okay. All right. That's straightforward enough right there. I love that. You got any thoughts on the livestock trade, Rich?
No, I don't. Things are going to change how I'm doing this modeling. I don't follow that quite as close.
Gotcha.
I'm hopeful. Normally, the livestock will wake up, obviously, when you come out of a recession, get a economy going. But it may take a few years here to really get that good demand. People got cabin fever. They want to get out and spend some money. So it's coming. How good will it come? I think I'm more bulled up on grains and the stock market than I am anything else. So.
Yeah. How, from a producer's perspective, how would you use the futures market over the next 6 months?
Because I don't get into advising. I'm pretty much a price analyst these days, put out signals, mm-hmm. and so I don't try to figure out what kind of strategy you use, what's the contractor, okay. how much do you sell. And this is why there's other professionals that actually
read
my stuff, because they want additional advice. To me, you know, I got to give it a chance to move up into summer. So I'm always one, I can't sell a huge amount, but you better have some price levels on the way down to go ahead and do it anyways to be safe. I definitely got something I want to mention here. You're going to see these funds, they've made a bunch of money and corn, soybeans. They're going to start moving out of futures and replacing it with call options and maybe both spreads and futures and call options. And the reason is, even if we get this weather market, and let's say corn just soars at $7 or some crazy thing, there's going to be limit down days along the way up, and they just don't want to deal with that. All right? Nobody does. So they're going to switch out of the futures because they're going to think that's more difficult to hang on the long side. They just don't want to be frustrated. They'll take some profit, and they'll take some of that profit, put it right back in to these other kind of strategies. Then they'll take their basic capital and start moving it to some other market. And this way, they're still in the game for the summer rally, but what they're really doing is reducing their risk as the prices rally. Okay. Something else to watch out for is a few of them will actually start building a bearish position for the next year because they assume a real crop problem is pretty much a guarantee it's going to be better next year.
Right.
And they'll start trying to make money on the way up to help pay for that hedge further out.
Yep. Gotcha. Gotcha.
I think a broker would help people with that idea.
Absolutely. Rich, where do we go to find the Critical Point podcast?
Criticalpoint.podbean.com.
Podbean.com. Got it. Thanks, buddy. We'll talk to you again soon.
Okay. Thank you, Chip.
You bet. That's Rich Possen, Critical Point Podcast. Kerry Artak next.
You're listening to AgriTalk, where the conversation begins. Join us at 855-4-TALK-AG.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm Chip. We've got Davis Michelson with me. Real quick before we get to Kerry. Davis, one of the things that Rich said about how to use the futures markets as a producer in the days, weeks, months ahead. He said, you know, don't get too crazy, but also have those prices under the market that are going to trigger additional sales. That's his plan B. He always talks about having a plan B in a marketing plan, in your marketing plan. So he's saying that, the market is showing us that it still has upside potential, corn, beans, wheat, and that's a fundamentally based approach to the markets, but doggone it, have a plan B. and those prices.
Absolutely. Actually, his plan B is way better than mine, which is Burger King.
Is that it? Is that
that's all I got.
That's it. Really?
Maybe the taco stand. I don't know who would have me. Yeah.
Unfortunate. Unfortunate. Well, you know, there's I'll be fine.
Quick Star. They wouldn't have me. Oh.
Love it. I don't know. Maybe you could get an application someplace. Okay. Let's get to Kerry Artak, Artak Advisory. How are you, Kerry?
I'm doing great, Chip. Great to be here.
Good, good, good. All right. Let's get it started. What you got for us today? Oh, wait. Before you do, don't forget, everybody, go to artakadvisory.com where you can see a video of what we're going to be talking about right now. Go ahead, Kerry.
Yeah. May ethanol. I'm doing May ethanol, April feeder cattle, and May cotton. So I'll start with May ethanol. This is kind of an update. I don't remember exactly which show, but in January I had mentioned a long-term buy signal had played out. And by that I mean expecting 2.2 something. It's a descending channel top, gradually dropping, but it's at 2.229 this month. We're not going to see that. I have it as kind of a summer-autumn objective, you know, and that's true above 1.493. We're trading 1.686. So I don't expect to see that 1.493 floor anytime soon. But if we do test it, say, over the next 3 to 5 weeks, it can contain selling through the rest of the year, and above which 2.229 remains kind of what I'm going to call a 5 to 8 month target. Now, upside, there is an accelerator that if we do close this week above 1.808 or next week above 1.820, and why I say that, it's a clearly defined rising channel top that has been containing the highs now for the last few weeks on the way up to that 2.229. So if we can close this week, for instance, above 1.808, 2.229, probably 2 to 3 months away. And so I'll just leave it at that. On to April feeder cattle, we're presently testing long-term support at 140.05. We closed 141.12 roughly, April contract. 140.05 is a base of support that can absorb selling through spring, and above which I'm still tenaciously holding on to that mid-150s longer-term upside objective, despite the fact we've been consolidating now for several months. So along the lines of that consolidation, if we can close this week above 146 and a quarter, then we should actually see that 154.77 within about 2 or 3 weeks, actually. 154.77 has been an objective for some time, since like September, October, and it can contain buying through summer, possibly the balance of the year. Now, downside with regard to April feeder cattle, bullish above 140.05, as I just said, but I turned bearish below 138.65. So if we close Friday, April contract 138.65 or lower, the market has tipped its hand and is indicating 2 to 3 months bearish continuation down in the very low 120s, 121 even, then expected within about 2 to 3 months where we could actually bottom out, and I think should then bottom out into possibly through summer trade. So bullish above 140.05. Bearish below 138.65 if we're looking through spring on April feeder cattle. And finally, May cotton. This is an update from last week. I think it's important because we're now in the new month of March, and I'm looking at monthly charts. Last week, I'd mentioned, you know, kind of the 92 and change to 94 and change area, and now we're in the month of March. It's 92.20 to 93.88, significant ceiling of resistance. We tested last week. We backed off significantly, but we're right back at it again, and this area can actually absorb buying through the rest of the year for the broader cotton market, 92.20 to 93.88, below which 66 even in reach again over the next few months. On the way down, 80.54. I don't expect to see that this week, but it can contain selling into April. And if we close below 80.54, expect that 66 even level within just about 3 to 5 weeks where we can bottom out really through the rest of the year. Now, upside, this is significant. If we close the week above 93.88, we're off to the races again. This market then continuing on up to 113.50 within probably 3 to 5 months. And I wouldn't be surprised to see 150 even broader cotton within a full year of closing this week above 93.88. But it hasn't happened yet. We're still in topic territory, and this market can back off into the mid-60s again over the next few months. And that's really all I got, Chip.
Okay. Sounds good. Sounds good. Great work, Kerry. Appreciate it. A little bit for everybody in that.
Thank you, sir.
You bet. Thank you. Go to RTAC Advisory, ARTACAdvisory.com, to get more of Kerry's perspectives. Davis, National Weather Service, yes. 6-10-day outlook for March 7th through the 11th has got above normal temperatures over the entire Corn Belt, most of the middle of the country, and even into northeast U.S. As a matter of fact, Iowa is looking at least 80% odds of above normal temperatures. It's really a warm pattern that we've got coming our way. Precipitation-wise, above normal precipitation over the Corn Belt. Okay. Now, we've got below normal precip expected through the Southern Plains, hard red winter wheat country, up through the Gulf states and along the East Coast, below normal precipitation. So warm and dry in most of those areas. Now, the 8 to 14 day, this is for March 9th through the 15th, above normal temperatures and above normal precipitation over the entire Corn Belt. What do you make of that, buddy?
Looky there. I like it. I like it a
lot. Warm temperatures are coming. Could spoil one last ice fishing trip for me is what it might do.
Don't drive your truck on the ice, Chip.
Stay away from that. Be careful.
For
me. For Davis and for producer Big Apple Joe Stackler, thank you for listening today. Tomorrow morning, Representative Glenn Thompson, Jeff Cooper from RFA, and Lance Honig from NASS. Tomorrow afternoon, Jeff Wilson and Brian Grady from Pro Farmer. Have a great night, everybody. Thanks to Acuron Corn Herbicide for sponsoring the AgriTalk podcast. Talk to your retailer about how you can get 5 to 15 more bushels with Acuron. Acuron is a restricted-use pesticide. Acuron Yield Advantage range is based on 2016 Syngenta and University trials.